Good evening, everyone, and welcome to eBible Fellowship's Questions and Answers time for a Friday evening. These broadcasts are live every Friday at about 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and this program is designed to interact with you with your questions and comments related to the Bible, and we'll try to respond as well as possible by going to the Bible. If you're calling us by phone with your questions or comments, dial 209-647-1600 and enter the access code 181610, followed by the pound key, which gets you into conference. Then press star 6 and then 1. If you're using Skype, press the free conference call button, then press the dial pad button and enter access code 181610 and press your pound key. And to get in line to ask a question, press star 6 and 1. And if you're using Paltalk, you simply go to eBible Fellowship's room, and once inside the room, you can raise your hand, and when you're asked to, you can post your question. And so, with our Bibles at the ready, it's now time to turn things over to our speaker for this Friday evening questions and answers time and say hello to Chris McCann. Good evening, Chris.
Welcome, everyone, to our Friday night question and answer. Once again, everyone is invited to share what's ever on your mind in the ways that were just outlined, and I'll try as much as possible to turn to the Bible for response to see if we can find out the answers from the Bible itself. Well, let's go to the first person on the phone tonight. Welcome to our Friday night question and answer.
I was looking at Deuteronomy 7:23, please.
Deuteronomy 7 and verse 23 says, "But Jehovah thy God shall deliver them unto thee, and shall destroy them with a mighty destruction until they be destroyed."
And the language "and shall destroy" is the same word that you were looking at earlier. That Hebrew, it's a 1949. And that's the word that the city rang. But in this case, it's the only place where it's translated as destroy. So my question really goes to the Bible, you know, to help the Bible student understand, how do you handle a case where you're trying to determine the meaning of a word in a verse, and you have something like this where it's really hard to insert rang where in place of this word destroy?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question, and this is pretty common where you're doing a word study and you'll have, say, 15 times that particular word is used, and 12 all fit one thought. They're all in line, and then you'll have a couple maybe slightly off, and then one might be out there in left field, and of course, that's how God has managed to hide things in the scriptures so well. And what I do is I just try to find the word and see what I can learn about that word as I go through every reference. And if I find a couple of verses that really help me to understand that word in the context I'm in, like in 1 Samuel 4, in this case, then I'll go to those references. Even though I looked at this reference and others, I wouldn't know what to say about it. So I just kind of, if I remember, I file it away, and maybe later something else comes up and it'll become understandable, and we'll see why God did what he did.
I think that the general sense of the word with this verse in place, it really is more of a tumult rather than a joy, you know, but then you have the one in Ruth where it's the city was moved about them, so it's kind of tough, but it seems like a disturbance more than a joy of, you know.
Well, it's a great emotional reaction. For instance, it's also when I just listed those two verses. I'm only comfortable with those two, but Yeah, it's just a very strong emotional outburst, which in the case of 1 Samuel 4, they were definitely joyful. They had just been beaten pretty badly, and now in their eyes, it's sort of like the Calvary has come and all's going to be well. So I think there was joy involved.
One last point. There's sometimes I'm a little concerned that it sounds like we're beating up on the churches. We never can get off that horse type of thing. And I know that when you're trying to analyze scripture for what it says, but in some cases it sounds like we're just overdoing it. And I just wanted you to kind of comment on that so people aren't concerned.
Well,
that's our focus.
We're at a point in the study where that's exactly what God is focusing in on. He's emphasizing, and he's going to emphasize it again and again very strongly, especially in 1 Samuel 4. Let me read what I'm sure people have read this chapter, but what's going to happen in 1 Samuel 4 is the Israelites are going to lose the battle. Hophni and Phinehas will be killed. The ark will be taken by the Philistines. The news, the report from the battle will go back to Eli. When he hears the ark is gone, he's going to fall off his seat backward and break his neck. At exactly the same time, who is it? Phinehas, his wife, is having a baby, and her father-in-law is dead. Her husband is dead. The Israelites have been defeated. The ark is gone. And when she has the baby dies. No, excuse me. She dies in childbirth, and she names the baby Ichabod, which means the glory is departed. And it is just one of the strongest emphases in the whole Bible on God's judgment upon an unfaithful people. There's no way around it. Now, Jeremiah had this type of emphasis, but I don't think this severe is in this chapter, because Jeremiah is a very big book, and God would hit the point home repeatedly throughout that book. But this is one of the most severe chapters pronouncing the wrath of God against the churches that I think we can find in the Bible. Well, thank you for your question and your comments. And if there's anyone else who has a question or a comment you'd like to make, please just raise your hand and you're invited. You're welcome to take the mic and to share whatever you like.
Can you please read and explain Ezekiel chapter 7, verses 12 and 13?
Ezekiel 7 has references to a multitude, and it's in the context of Judgment Day. And we can understand that, I think, if we turn to Joel chapter 3. And I'll begin reading in verse 12. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full. The fats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of Jehovah is near in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. That helps us to pinpoint what God is talking about. As we know, immediately after the tribulation, the sun is darkened, and Joel 3:15 identifies with Matthew 24:29 and other verses. And so this is referring to Judgment Day, and Judgment Day is a time of judgment upon the multitude. Just look at the population of the earth with over 7 billion people. It is a an enormous multitude of people that are in the day of judgment. And I think that's how we can relate those verses in Ezekiel 7. But thank you for your question. Is there another question from Pal Talk?
Yes. Echo 2011 asks, I know the Lord said we are to have a servant's attitude. Can you explain how does that apply to the workplace?
Well, that's a good question. You know, God gives us some very definite guidelines for working in Ephesians chapter 6 and some other places. For instance, he says in verse 5, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh. Now, we know that long ago there were slave-master relationships and bond servants and things like that, but it's the same principle. It's someone who is the boss and someone who is responsible for listening to what the boss has to say and doing it. And so here God is giving us one bit of information. In the workplace, be obedient. Be obedient to the boss. Whatever he says, whatever the government tells us to do, as long as it's lawful, according to the law of God, we're obligated to do it. And we shouldn't do so grudgingly, and nor should we murmur, complain, and speak badly about the boss if the boss tells us to do things. And that's going to be one of the biggest temptations in the workplace will be when others are told to do things and then the boss walks away, and then that person's going to be critical perhaps and start saying some negative things about the boss and try to draw the child of God into it. And we don't want to get into that kind of situation. We don't want to talk about anyone, especially the boss, behind their back. And we just want to do our job. And it goes on to say here in Ephesians 6:5, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling in singleness of your heart as unto Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ doing the will of God from the heart. Now here, this is important, because when someone starts working hard, doing what the ownership or the management wants them to do, and you can have others that are maybe beginning to look at you and think badly about your motives. Oh, this guy's just trying to get in good with the bosses. He's trying to make me look bad. Well, we don't get into any of that kind of thinking. We're not working, never. We never work to please the boss. We never work to please anyone in the first instance. It's always work to please the Lord. It's work unto God, no matter what the work is, as it says here, in verse 7, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men. And then we can have whatever job we're doing transformed into an act of ministry to God. We are going to do the best we can, and we want to be the best example of a child of God in all ways, in everything. We want to witness for the Lord Jesus Christ. And the best way of doing that is to be the best worker possible. We're not competing with others. We're just trying to use our time and our ability to perform the best service that we can to God, and as a result, it will be the best service we can to our bosses. And of course, while in the workplace, there's also all kinds of other verses that God gives us about how to deal with people, how to get along with people, and to be concerned about them. We really should be praying a lot. I know that that's one of the best things that any child of God can do, no matter what they're doing, no matter what their situation, whether it's a wife at home with the children or the husband who goes to work, no matter where he's working. The best thing to do is to pray ahead concerning the day, because after we've been there a while, we know what to expect. We get to know the route. We know the traffic. We know when we come in. We know individuals who maybe like to needle us, and so we can pray especially for them. We know things about people. We could be praying, "Oh Lord, bless this one and bless that one." Actually, today we can pray, "Oh God, may this cup pass from off this person I'm working with and that person I'm working with." So that's very important. And we can also, if the morning isn't going all that great, we can sneak out at lunch and with our Bible and go to the car or go to some quiet place, maybe under a tree, read a chapter and pray some more for the afternoon. I know I've had that experience where the morning did not go that well, and it was trying, but then, you know, thank the Lord, there was lunch, and I was able to go to Him and cast whatever troubling concerns were bothering me from the morning on Him, and normally things went much better in the afternoon. And so prayer is a great help. Thinking of scriptures is also a great help. But thank you for that question. And let's go to the next question from Pal Talk, if there is one.
Yes. In Revelation 9, is it possible for the 5 months to be 5 years?
No, it says 5 months. And we can't understand it to be 5 years. Now, one possibility is that there was something special about the 5 months following May 21, if you remember. And that was that the world was told about that 5 month period. And also at the end of 5 months regarding October 21. So in a special kind of a way, the world was on edge. They did not completely relax from the message of Judgment Day, May 21, until that five-month period had passed. And so the Bible calls it 5 months of torment, but the word that's translated torment there is a word that's translated as toiled. One time when the apostles were rowing upon a troubled sea, the word was used. It says they toiled in rowing. That is, it was just an uncomfortable situation for them. It wasn't torturous. It wasn't that idea of torment. And so the world was perhaps tormented in that sense. And also, the Ministry of Family Radio, which had a far reach, was broadcasting for that 5 months period concerning October 21. that's one possibility. I wouldn't say that's definitely it, but certainly there was something different about that 5 months than the rest of the time we've entered into since then, and that's just one thing that for us to think about. But thank you for that question. And is there any other questions?
Nothing here.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for being with us tonight, and also I'd like to thank those that brought up their questions, and especially for the Bible verses we had an opportunity to read and consider. Lord willing, we'll get together this Sunday with our online fellowship beginning at 12 noon Eastern time. And please join us next week as we continue this study in the book of 1 Samuel. But for now, I'm going to say good night, and may the Lord's perfect will be done.
Thank you so much for joining us during this Friday evening questions and answers time. The broadcast is heard live over the Internet beginning at approximately 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You may also join our Sunday afternoon broadcast of eBible's Questions and Answers beginning at approximately 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Until then, may the Lord grant us his wisdom, and may his perfect will be done. Have a blessed evening. Good night.